This is an interview recorded for the Western Sydney Women's Oral History Project, From Farms to Freeways, Women's Memories of Western Sydney. This interview is number 3, recorded with Miss Claire Furfer on the 30th of August, 1991.
My name is Claire Ann Furfer. I live at 47 Clifton Street, Blacktown. I was born at Parramatta. Date of birth was the 30th of January 1913. And I was born at Parramatta. I'm not married, an Australian. No children.
Right, so first of all, I'll just ask you about your period of residence in the area. How long have you lived in Blacktown itself?
We moved up here in 1923. So what's that? 23 forever. That's 68 years back, isn't it?
My goodness. So you've seen a lot of changes,
yes,
in the area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just as a bit of family background, what did your father do?
Originally, he had a carrying business in Sydney, horse-drawn one, and he used to move fruit and pick up cases, like from Darling Harbour or the ships from the railway, and take them to the markets. And he had two or three wagons, people, and he sold out there in 1920, and we came up to Seven Hills to live. And then from then on, he was a general handyman. Did painting, whatever was available, he'd do.
And what about your mother? Did she?
Well, my mother lived in the district at Seven Hills, and that's where he married her. Because, can I put in a bit further?
Mm-hmm.
He went he was living at Glebe with his parents until the father died, and his grandmother at Seven Hills took him and reared him up there till he was about, I suppose, 15 or 16, might have been a bit older, when he went back to live with his mother again. He could have been older. That's when he was got the, he was working evening for somebody with the cartage, the horse-drawn carriage, wagons, and then he acquired his own.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because when we moved up here to Seven, we went to Seven Hills for 3 years, that was at my mother's place. The grandfather had an orchard. Seven Hills was all orchards. Most of it was summer fruit around there, and then there was a certain amount of citrus and grapes. But the main part, they didn't know what to put back into the soil and the finish and the water, so that's how all the orchards went from Seven Hills and around. And it became more of a dairy, you know, they had dairy farms, different ones, but we didn't. And then we moved up here. And from then on, this is where, well, even at Seven Hills, he did a bit of every type of work. And so that's how we moved up. And my mother had been, she lived at home most of the time with her parents, but was a dressmaker. And so that she used to do this, make the frocks for the different ones.
And did you build this house, or was it
already
here?
No, my grandfather built this house, and actually built the one above. He built the first one, and that must have been built somewhere. We worked it out roughly about 1900, and this one must have been built somewhere around about 1908 to 110 or somewhere like that, or it might have been up to 112. And actually this became the first police station. Because it was a trooper Wilson came from Prospect, came over, because the troopers were the ones that were on the horses. So, and then there was the next policeman came in, and of course when the grandmother was selling the property at Seven Hills, we just came up, my mother and I, and just gave the policeman notice, and he said, all right, I'll be out next week, see? Plenty of empty houses around. And we moved in, so that was how, in March, the end of, yes. I think we moved in about the end of March 1923 up here. And this is where we've been ever since.
So you would have been about 10 years old then?
Yes.
Mm.
So I went to school up at Seven Hills, and then, well, actually I did go to school at Stanmore, because we lived at Camperdown in those early years, until we moved to Seven Hills. And then then Seven Hills. That was a one-man school up there. He must have had about 30 pupils in. That was Seven Hills North. The school's still there, but because the old building's gone. And then up here to Blacktown.
Hmm. And did you walk from here to school?
Oh, yes. Oh, there was no motor cars in those days. No. People didn't go and collect their children. There was no trouble about, being careful of who might have dumped you, or don't talk to strange men, you were told. But, oh no, everybody walked.
No buses or anything?
No, there was no buses in the early days, but the first bus, I had a photo of one of the first ones. I gave it to the, go to the library. I think they've got one, and the Historical Society's got one. It was a photo of it, a picnic, and it was, what's the buses? Anyway, it's these little buses, like a little tiny mini bus. It only carry about, wouldn't carry many, no more than about 20 passengers. And that ran from Blacktown Station, Richmond Road to Blacktown Station out to Park Lee, because the jail wasn't there by any means, but that was the outskirts of Blacktown, Park Lee. And then coming in a bit further was Headingley, and then of course Blacktown, just the... it was really more or less only up to Cambridge Street, and equivalent to 4th or 5th Avenue, going across.
And is this... this amount of land that you have here now, that's a lovely big area.
Yes.
And was that the amount that you had to begin with?
Yes, yeah. Grandfather. Well, see, he must have bought... Actually, we've got two sections, or lot numbers, as they call it. It should be 41 and 43, and out like 45 and 47. And I think the grandfather, his idea was, that's why he built them both on the end, he could have put another house in that within a 50-foot frontage, you see. This is a 75 foot, nearly 76 foot, I think it is. And then the grandmother owned the other, she owned that land, or that was her house. She must have built that with her money. And that was only like a 38 foot or a 40. And because most of the allotments, evidently, I did see an original map of the area when they were selling them in the 1880s or 1888s or something like that. For this area, and they were all little, only small widths, and that's why a lot of the places in the this part here and up on the hill, they really haven't got a drive in down for a garage. They can only park in the front.
That must be because it's so close to the railway.
Oh yes, well also too, they never envisaged motor cars. You know, it was a horse drawn. Well, probably they could get the horse down or something. But most of them would buy two lots. See, they'd have the extra piece in the ones that was going in the early days that would build. And then if they gave their families up the road there, there was the original chap, old chap, and then he gave it to his, or his son got it. But then they had to take it off there. So that made it shorter.
And Claire, looking at the more into the, say, the 1940s, say when you were in your early 20s, 30s?
30s.
Early
30s. 30s, yeah.
What was the area like then? Had it become very much more built up, or?
Not a great deal. Up to prior to World War One, there wasn't a lot of...
World War II,
yeah. Because, see, up till then, there wasn't a great number of homes. Even in about half a mile, I suppose, from the station, or three quarters from the post office, around was the area. This side would only go, it's Fifth Avenue, you know, where Blacktown High School.
Mm.
Well, those avenues, that had been subdivided earlier in the early 1920s or prior to that, but there wasn't many houses in these avenues. And then on this other side, there's the next set of lights that comes opposite. That's Fifth Avenue, Saxville Street. Well, then down further, there's another street that was Cambridge Street. Well, that was the border for over here. It went right up to Stephen Street. And then over the other side, near the hospital, well, most of that was hardly anything over there, only just odd homes with large areas of land or poultry farms. And the other part was over in Blacktown, down to Waters Road, coming back up Bungarabi Road, up to Flushcombe Road, and that was the closest, well, reasonably close settled. Most of them, there's often land in between, but the homes were there.
Nothing and much beyond
on
those
that. That was the area of Blacktown, and even on the other side, well, there was the showground there, and there was only just a couple of houses just near the station, and even down the other way where it runs back onto the railway line, not many homes there, and they were all older settlements. Mm.
And so this house, of course, is it's built of what materials?
Wood
timber?
Yes, timber with a timber.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice big house, obviously.
Well, this part was added to, yeah, we've got three bedrooms. Well, it's a lounge, but it was there. It used to be the dining room, but see, they never built lounges, more or less. It was the dining room and the kitchen, and this had a, you can see at the end of the door, you can see where it runs across back down to here. It was an L-shaped veranda, and then Dad put this extra piece on to make it a big living room, 20 by 20, back there. So that gave us a big space. Hmm.
And you always had an inside bathroom and toilet,
yeah, well, oh no, oh
no,
not the toilet. Oh no, in those days there was no water. It was the walk down the garden path down the back. yes, it was the sanitary mat.
Right.
Yes, it didn't come on until I suppose it was the late middle 60s or something, when the sewerage started to come into Blacktown. It might have been the 70s before I got it on. Yeah. Just got to stop and think to find papers, but no, we haven't had it that long in Blacktown. Some of them on the other side got it because the hospital was given, was put on the sewerage, because that was running to Botany Bay or Bondi or somewhere, but it ran to the ocean out there. And this side, the hill and all around this way had to run back, and it goes back to the council at Breakfast Creek at Quakers Hill treatment plant. And
it was quite late.
Oh yes, it was late because we'd hear about it and everybody was saying, when are we going to get it? And
you had the regular sanitary
service. Most times it was only once a week. If you wanted additional service, you either rang them up and they'd come and bring it if you had a lot of visitors. Mm. And then at times if they went on the strike, or if it was too bad and it was really, Dad would have to go and dig a little hole and empty some of it. Down the back. Mm.
They were the days.
Now the bathroom, in the most days when they, at least the buildings in the early days, bathroom and laundries were together.
And what about talking more around about the late 40s now, because that's the period we're interested in more, into the 50s, when the change started taking place. What was the what sort of appliances did you have in the house? Did you have refrigerators and vacuum cleaners?
Yeah, but refrigerators were, yes, and a vacuum cleaner. I know the first refrigerator we got was the Golden Jubilee one, that Silver Jubilee for King George the Fifth and Queen Mary.
Oh.
Well, my mother's sister was been sick, and it was a terminal cancer that she had, and she came out here and said, we got this fridge. It was an Electrolux, a little small one. Well, it was quite a large size, but we thought it was big enough in those days after having an ice chest, and because you either had to go and get the ice or the iceman would come around if you ran out. And she died now, but it must have been just coming on to 1939 or something like that, prior to war. But after that, it was always the fuel stove, and my mother liked her fuel stove. There were a few electrics around, but because electricity was very expensive, as everybody thought in those days. And then after the war years, Dad bought a small Metis electric stove. It was up there. It was just the one element on top, but a big hot plate around it, and then you had the separate oven, and it was only the two switches, one for the top and one for the oven. And had that for quite a few years. Well, I kept that. I used to use it mainly. because I lost my mother and father within 2 months of each other. So, of course, I'd never done that much housework, Mum used to, or being at the office the weekends. I'd be out on a Saturday most times, or towards the latter part I didn't, but in the early days I went out. I worked in town for quite a while and then came out to Clyde and up to the latter part, up to St Mary's after the war was over. And so then I got the other stove. Well, that's about 25 years, I think. Old now, might be a bit longer.
Electric
mm-hmm. one. Because the fuel stove is still there, but because it's the dampers rusted up. And my brother put a sheet of tin or something over the chimney up top to stop the rain coming through. Because if you lit a fire now, you'd smoke the place.
And so what sort of work then did you do back in the 40s?
I went to a business college and was trained for stenographer and
This was after leaving school.
School, yes.
I should really talk about your school days first.
All right.
How long did you stay at school?
I went to Parramatta. From Blacktown I went to Parramatta, and that was the Parramatta Domestic Science. It was a business one, more or less. Took in housework, hygiene and cooking. We had cooking and that. But I only went up to 8th class, because mm-hmm. they didn't have these year 1s and 2s then. And I left and I had the next year. I didn't go that far, only up to the 8th, I only just started there and I had a bad knee. It was a bone condition. And so I was off school. They gave me deep ray therapy. And fortunately it did the trick. It pushed the bone back. It killed the disease in the bone. But I couldn't do any running and that, and I had to stay home from school. So it was a good 6 months, and I start the next year. Well, then it came to the 8th class, and that's when I left, and I went to a business college, Parramatta Stotts, because one of the names is they're already gone now. Mm-hmm. It was 12 months there, learning shorthand and typing, and then that. I went to town, they would find a position for you in those days, so you could go into the main one in town, Stotts, and they'd send you out for interviews in town and around. And I got into, I suppose I had about a month in there, to an advertising place. They wanted a junior girl to do some typing, etc. And I had 12 years with the advertising. It was Katz Patterson. That's the Patterson they talk about, George Patterson's George. He was there with Patterson, but they dissolved partnership later. And they're out of once Mr. Katz got out of the business, that was the condition. The name of Katz Patterson would drop, because they couldn't trade on it. And then from there, that was it. I was still there when war was on, and towards the end of the war, Clyde Engineering wanted somebody, and I thought, no Saturday morning work. In those days you worked Saturday mornings, apart from a government concern if you were in the public service and you had the Saturday mornings off. And you'd work till 12 o'clock, 9 o'clock till 12, and 9 till 5 or 5:30 in the weekdays. And when I started in town first, the electric trains were not, they were still building them, and because we were down in Kent Street, and another one, the lass that was at the office, she used to walk up, she came from Epping, so we'd walk up the back way, up Liverpool Street, and right up to Central Station, and the steam train started from there, and you'd get yourself settled into a steam train. And some of your friends would be coming home, same going in of the morning, we'd all be on the train together, because if anybody got into that seat, you know, we'd give them looks, and we'd travel through to town. Yes, we'd get, you'd either pick up a tram, you could pick up the trams if you want to in the morning, you might have, or you'd walk down.
How long did the train trip take?
It only took just the hour, actually, sometimes only like 55 minutes. And considering at times with the electrics, because there was extra trains on the line, but some of them were taking just as long as the old steam trains, and they would be all stations to Parramatta and then a few other, Granville, and sometimes all nearly to Granville, probably Lidcombe, and then Strathfield, Burwood, Homebush, Strathfield and Burwood, and then Redfern, and then to Central at the steam trains. So you used to do a lot of either knitting or reading, because the lights were not the best in the winter time for coming home for reading. And then from there I came back up to Clyde Engineering, and I was out in the aircraft in the office there, and then I finally got inside. They wanted somebody in there, so because they were not doing much really, but it's no wonder the war effort cost a lot, because they were all on cost plus jobs, so it didn't matter how long it took them or what staff they'd have on. And then I went down to an engineering place at Lidcombe, a good ones, and then after the war years over, a couple of years afterwards, St Mary's, he wanted to move his factory up there, and so we got in the office part of the munition area and a big workshop there and moved up. Then I took off for New Zealand with a girlfriend in 1948. Mm-hmm. And I had 6 months over there, but she stayed on, and she's still over there. but I liked New Zealand very much, and I worked for the milk, on a temporary basis, the milk board. Actually, it was 4 months working holiday, and then the rest was the holiday. And then came back, and when I came back, it was at the end of 48. And then I went down to Camellia. Well, I applied for a job, Australian Cream Tartar was the name of the company, and that's where I went to. Secretary there for the, he was the assistant managing director, and that's where I stayed for the next 28 years. Really? So I retired from there. But in the meantime, they'd changed their names, because they were it was one third American, one of English, and a little bit of New Zealand, and it became Stouffer Chemicals. And their different subsidiaries, well, now Stouffer's only got a name. You've got to look under Pacific Chemicals to find Stouffer now.
And they were at Camellia.
Camellia. But it was down in Grand Avenue, down the other side of the Rose Hill Racecourse. Calhoun Street divides the racecourse from the building. There was another, it was Chrome Chemicals, was another one of their subsidiaries that only had been started in the war years. And this Grand Avenue, there was good, it was Hardy's up at the Camellia station, that was the only station. Then Goodyear's, Crema Tartar, Wesco Paints Crema Tartar, and then you went down to Wunderlix, and one of it's a shell, it was an oil company down the bottom end. And I believe but now, up till the war years or to the close of the war years or something, the steam tram used to run from down George Street from Parramatta Park Gates down to the wharf down on Parramatta River. And that was why Grand Avenue was so wide. Yes.
And so the electric trains didn't come through here till the 50s?
No, it was near, it was 1955. Yeah, they came through in 1955, and that was when the official opening. Well, once the trains came through, after the war years, there wasn't much of the way of a population influx, because it was only like 5 years after war had been, was over. And so, but once the electrics came in and the electrification went through, well, that's where the influx came, and it just spread. And there was land that had been poultry farms, they were all being subdivided, and of course, and it spread out ever since then. It's been going and going and spreading more. And at times when you go around, you think, oh, that was vacant land. Oh, look at all the houses that's going up. And see, even on the way out on the Richmond Road there, now there's so many. A lot of them are housing settlements with the Housing Commission's building. And then others are private homes. And up now near to the Rooty Hill turnoff, that all that was big poultry farms, and now it's all homes across there. And see, it's nearly back to the railway line again.
What happened to all the poultry farmers today?
Well, most of them, a few of them that was left, they gradually, well, they were getting out, and the egg board was limiting them with what they could produce. And because they were getting on in years, a lot of them, and they either sold out or just gave it away and retired. Mm.
So,
or their sons would take over occasionally. Mm.
And what about industry in the Blacktown area?
Wasn't much at all. It was only, and even the shops in those days, there wasn't much in the way. Hardly any offices. Might have been a wooden coal yard or a... early in the piece was the timber mills, because where the Warwick car park was, or is now, just across Sunny Holt Road Bridge, the other part, that was what they called, was a timber mill, there's Stewart's timber mill. And see, he used to be all in the logs and that, I'd come from Kurrajung, and they'd be cutting up and supplying firewood and sleepers and different things, and he had a bit of produce. I think, no, did he have the produce? No, I don't think he went in for the produce, but then there was a few that just had like a general store of produce only, and they'd supply the food, the poultry food and that, and chaff and everything for horses and cows. Because a lot of people would have cows, or they did in the early stages. We had a cow for a few years, but then, of course, we brought it up from Seven Hills, but then somebody had to milk it each time. Dad was the one that had it for. But then the milkmen started to come, and there was no milk deliveries, not on this side. Whether there was one earlier on the other side, I couldn't say. And then they started, Tom's was... who was the first one? Then Tom's took over. But they do the delivery every day, you'd get daily milk. Mm-hmm. And you'd leave your jug out in the front ground and they'd just come and put it in and pick it up. Mm.
When would that have been?
Of a morning. The boys had to do it before, often they do it before they went to school. The father and I suppose the whoever helped, maybe the boys had to help too with the milking. And then gradually it was on full, they'd left school and then they would be working at home on the farm, because that was out going up near King Langley Road up the hill a bit there, was their dairy farm was.
And did you have other things delivered to the house?
Yes, you could have the baker called. Every day, I think it was locally, they called every day with your bread. There was a greengrocer came around if you wanted it, or you could buy. There was a bit of a greengrocer shop down the street, or you'd buy the things. But mainly, I think Mum, in the early days, she probably bought it off them. And because when you're going to school, you're not wondering where does it come from. There'd be fruit, or what are the vegetables you'd have, or you'd grow some yourself. A lot of them.
Did you grow much?
Not a lot, because Dad was, he was working, doing the odd jobs, different things, painting or repairing or doing so-and-so, and you're on the go.
Did you keep chooks at all?
Oh yes, we had chooks. That was down the back there. Because the scraps from the house went to it, the peels and that would go into it, and they'd be fed. That was Mum's job, to look after the chooks and feed them. And there was separate little divisions so that keep the ones, the younger ones, away from the older ones.
And did she shop locally?
Oh yes, we used to go to the mainly over here to the corner shop, just this side where Ultra Tune is. There was a shop there, and you'd go over. My young brother, I'd go over at times with the order Saturday morning, but my other young brother, the one that lived at home, he was the youngest, and he'd go and he'd. He'd ask Mum, now what do you want today, and so-and-so, he'd run through the list and he'd go over there and get the things. And he'd make up your order while you waited, because it wasn't far to carry it.
No.
And then later on in the, I suppose it would have been, was the late 30s or in the 40s, there was a one over in the town. He had it. It was about one of the first self-service shops he put in. It was just groceries and that. You could go around, pick them up and just take them to the counter and then carry them home. And he was reasonably cheap. But there was other great little grocers down the town.
So how has the shopping centre changed
from
those times until today?
Even up this end for a while there, Coles was opposite in Main Street, just up from McDonald's. Woolworths was up there. And I don't move over later. And then they were down the town. But see, that made all the difference, the supermarkets nearby, that you could get them, the things. And of course they brought them down, and of course then when Kmart developed over that side, they went over there when their lease expired, took the new world section. Then Woolworths was down the town, their variety one was down the town. And then of course they all went over the shopping centre, so it's left us, yeah, I find it better to go to King Langley to shop, because at least it's on the flat more and you can wheel out your trolley to the car, whereas if you go to the shopping centre over there, you've got to wheel them down and around, or call and get the things, pick them up at the pickup.
And what about when the health services in the area? Because in the 40s, the